Hello world, you are listening to Google by Mike, a bite-sized tech news podcast. If it's Google news, Google-related news, or news related to Google-related news, you'll hear it here. Now, sit back, relax and enjoy.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today is a very special episode. Today, I have a special guest where we're going to be discussing all things Google, but most specifically, how Google works with us and what is Google to us. Today is April 24th, 2020, and today I have, go ahead and introduce yourself, sir.
Hey, my name's Jason Crabtree.
And this guy is amazing. I've actually known him. How long have we been chatting?
Man, I think we've been talking for roughly a year and a half, something like that, I think.
Okay, yeah, it all started from Allo, Google Allo,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it started from Allo.
And that was like 2018, 19?
At this point, it's probably 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago.
Man, and we're not going to go into the whole Google Allo thing. So I guess just starting off, yeah, what's your background with technology in general?
My background, well, I started out as a kid, you know, like we all did, just growing up, messing around with my parents' computer, taking it apart, putting it back together, figuring out how things worked. I grew up with the sort of beginning of the internet, as far as the internet being popular, at least. My first internet service provider was People PC, and then I got AOL, and later in high school, I did some technology work for some small businesses around the area, setting up computers.
You said People PC?
People PC. Yeah, it was a dial-in service.
Oh, wow. Oh, nice. Yeah. Like the whole...
Yep.
Like,
yep.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That was my first ISP. And then later on in high school, I did some IT work for some small businesses in the area and some nonprofits and things like that. And went to school for information systems. Nice. And then I started working in technology, and I have been ever since. And currently I'm a technical support engineer for a software as a service company in DC.
Nice. So and this is why I wanted to interview you first, because you're kind of like, you're a technologist, right? You're a tech enthusiast.
Oh, for sure.
You know, like, as you said, like you started like in high school. And you probably tinkered with things when you were younger than that, right?
Yeah, I mean, elementary school, middle school, had my first computer, I think, in fifth grade. Yeah, so just messed around with that. And
do you remember exactly what computer it was?
Yeah, it was a Packard Bell.
Wow, yeah. See, there's definitely going to be quite a few people I know that, like, they're going to know exactly. Like, that's going to, like, tickle their ears a little bit.
Yeah, it was a Packard Bell. I think it had, like, 32 megabytes of RAM and like a 512 megabyte hard drive.
So just to for reference for people that don't necessarily know the difference between gigabytes and megabytes, can you 30 second explanation, the difference between having a 30 megabit RAM system versus a 30 gigabit RAM system?
So now when you buy a phone, it probably has 4 gigabytes of RAM in it. That's 4,000 megabytes. My first computer had 32 megabytes.
Yeah, it's crazy to even think that we can operate at that time. Because even now, if we were to get something that has only 30 megabytes of something, we'd be like, this better be free, right? Because
it's unusable. It's unusable. Even like a regular, you know, an average length song in like 320 kbps MP3, it is going to be pushing 30 megabytes. So, yeah.
That's crazy. That's insane. But yeah, I'm glad, thankful for being transparent and explaining, you know, your technology journey.
Yeah, of course.
Everyone's journey is different, obviously. And that's the one reason why you and I actually can talk a lot about technology, because we kind of come from the same background, but like different backgrounds.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know this, but for me, before my senior year in high school, I wasn't really a tech guy at all. I had my first VTech fake computer when I was like, I think 11, 10 or 11. Do you remember those?
Yeah. Yep.
But I didn't have my own. I didn't have my own computer. Well, we had a house computer. I think when I was like 15 or 14 years old, it was like a desktop. So I remember the whole AOL dial up where you just got to do the all that crazy noise and whatnot.
Oh yeah.
And I dove into more consumer or like commercial technology once I started to work at like Geek Squad or Best Buy. And that was not well until I was like 20 years old. So between that time, I studied computer science. That was like my first dive into like anything IT related. And I was completely overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And then we both have a history with Geek Squad as well.
You can find, if anyone is a technologist or someone that like likes tech in any way, shape, or form, there's probably like a 3-degree separation, maybe 2 or 3 separation of some, they know someone or they used to work with someone or actually used to work at Geek Squad.
Yeah, I'd say probably 50% of my current friendship circle have worked at a Geek Squad somewhere.
Man. And I mean, not to knock Geek Squad, but like, I'm not even knocking Geek Squad in general, but Geek Squad was like an amazing, I think it's an amazing first job for anyone that's trying to get into IT.
Yeah, it was a good start. It was.
Like, you may not have or get any official certifications within Geek Squad. You'll get like Geek Squad certifications, but like, they're not like, you can't go to a different job and be like, hey, I'm a Geek Squad certified. They're going to be like, all right, cool. But,
right.
You know, but.
But you know what it teaches you? It teaches you how technology is supposed to work for people.
Exactly. That's very true.
How technology should work for the average person.
That's a great point.
Because once you get into corporate, like enterprise IT, and you get into development and things like that, you're catering to a completely different crowd, which is, you know, a much smaller crowd than the average, you know, technology user. So being in a retail environment like Best Buy and Geek Squad, it teaches you what the average person is using and how they're using it, and really how everyone should be creating technology to work for the average person. So it kind of gives you that that worldview of what everybody really needs.
No, that nails it right on the head. And that's the one thing I learned. I'm glad that I learned that first before going into the enterprise.
Oh, me too. Yeah. It has really helped me. And, you know, I can say that it has helped on a resume. Because now that I'm in the customer service aspect of IT, it definitely helps on the resume for them to see that. And then I dealt with people directly, and people who didn't even, you know, necessarily understand the technology that they were trying to use.
Right.
And it was my job to help them understand it. And in a way, that's still my job. So
yeah, that's so true. Because that's something that's rare within just IT industry, is that like, a lot of times we're known to be very standoffish and awkward and not really good with people. Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, Geek Squad definitely kind of forced you to actually have to be good with people, because a lot of times, I mean, not to get into the weeds of an everyday life of a Geek Squad employee, but like, you deal with a lot of personal stuff that people are going through. Like, you have like an Uncle Jim come in and be like, I can't access my computer. I can't log into my computer. Like, this random stranger that comes up and they ask you to fix their computer. You don't even know this person. You have to ask specific questions to figure out the needs that they're looking for, the problems they're running into. Like, it's so many levels that you got to assess and get through.
Yeah. And a lot of those skills apply to other areas of the IT field. You know, if you're writing software, you have to understand the needs of the target audience for the software. And it's sort of the same thing that you can pick up from working at Geek Squad. You have to understand someone's needs in order to, you know, make the technology work for them.
Right, exactly. And I mean, so to kind of segue into kind of the next question that I had, speaking of target audience, what is your experience, or what has your experience been when working like with Google products? Not like professionally working, or just like using Google products?
I remember when Google launched the search engine. I remember when Gmail launched, and I got into the Gmail beta, and I think I got it only a couple months after the beta launched. So I've been there since the beginning, and you know, I've used or at least sampled every product they've pretty much ever put out for consumers. And you know, I remember the highs and the lows, the great products and the ones that didn't work out so well and things like that. I remember being super excited about Google Wave and then being super disappointed about Google Wave.
Oh wow. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I've been a long time, you know, sort of Google, the core Google app suite of Gmail and Calendar. And I was a huge Google Talk user back in the day. And then, of course, Hangouts. So, you know, now I live in that world, and I use all their services, and I've done some, you know, server testing in Google Cloud. I have Chromebooks, nice. You know, lots of Android devices. So, yeah, they kind of sort of serve my needs. And I used to be the kind of person who would run everything myself. I used to have servers in my house. I used to have home theater PCs and things like that. And now I've kind of offloaded some of that stuff into the cloud, and Google is a big part of that. Nice. And it's a lot less work for me. It's a lot more convenient for me. And I'm sure it's better for Google to have me as a customer and a user. They're getting my money and they're getting my data, but I'm, you know, right. I'm getting the convenience and the ease of use. So it's definitely beneficial. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're definitely going to get into all the tech that you use specifically, but one thing you definitely touched on is the fact that, like, from the very beginning, the first product that you mentioned was Gmail, right?
Yeah.
And from what I've heard or what I've seen from other people is that, like, Gmail was literally, like, even though Google Search was around, Google Search was such a, and obviously Google Search is just when you go to google.com, it was such a, it was already ingrained within our generation that it wasn't a thing, right? It wasn't a product at the time, you know? But I definitely agree that the first product that people associated with Google in terms of, like, a thing that they actually, like, they are getting something out of it specifically was Gmail.
Gmail, for sure.
And, you know, and what's funny to me is that, like, I don't remember getting my first Gmail account. I just remember having it, you know?
I mean, I remember email being absolutely terrible, and then seeing Gmail and thinking, oh man, this is a ray of light. And then, you know, and then of course the whole beta sign up process made it even more desirable because you wanted to be one of the few elite people to have it first and things like that. So it always creates sort of an artificial demand, but I think that artificial demand turned into actual demand. And we can see that now looking back at history, the way it worked out. I mean, who doesn't have a Gmail account?
Exactly. It's almost to the point where if you have anything but a Gmail account, it's kind of weird. Like, if someone were to,
if you see someone with an at Yahoo or
exactly
at MSN or something like that, it's really weird.
It's super weird. And like I feel like I'm trying to, like, search back in my brain and think, how did I get my first Gmail account? I think if anything, I want to say a friend probably, because I had a Comcast email. Like, that's like, I don't even think I used or had an AOL email account. I probably did because I had AOL instant messaging, but, and that's definitely dating us. But I think someone, like, invited me to Gmail, but I just don't remember, like, creating my Gmail account.
Yeah, it was invite only for a long time.
Yeah. I'm glad that I chose a good Gmail account because I've stuck with that Gmail account for years.
Yeah, same.
But you also mentioned Google Wave, and I would honestly say 60% of the general public don't know what Google Wave is. So could you, like, kind of explain what Google Wave was at the time?
Google Wave was like email on steroids. It was sort of a combination of email and Google Drive and the chat that was inside of Google Docs and Google Drive. Where you would have, it's similar to, like, the threaded conversations inside of Hangouts chat right now, or Google Chat as it's now called. You could start threads inside of threads inside of threads, and you could attach files. And then you could chat off to the side about each thread and reference the thread in the chat, and link to, do, like, hard links to the files that are buried deep in the, and it was live. Everything was live.
What's so crazy is that sounds like Slack.
It was hugely influential.
It's crazy how things have gone, like, full circle, but
man.
And so, like, I mean, not to go down the whole rabbit trail of how Google Wave turned into, what was it? Google Buzz. The Google Buzz turned into Google Plus.
I mean, they broke, like, that team up into multiple teams, and then there was Buzz, and then, you know, that sort of turned into Google Plus. And then there was a Google Spaces thing for a while, which was like small communities. Yeah, all those developers, or some of those developers, had been around since the Google Wave days.
So, and here's my question, and this is me actually personally asking you, because I ask myself this question all the time. But, like, how do you feel about the level of consistent inconsistency when it comes to messaging, like, yeah, I guess messaging or social entities that Google has, Google products?
Well, I don't think Google is naturally a company who's good at social. They're sort of good at, I would say, interpersonal communication, but social is, I think, out of their wheelhouse, and they've really struggled with it over the years. Now, if you look back at things like Gmail and how they put the chat inside of Gmail, and they put, you know, the live comments and things like that in Google Docs, there are some social aspects there, but it's more, like I said, like interpersonal, business professional communication than it is social. And I sometimes think they struggle to understand what the average person really wants from a social product.
And it's funny you say that, because there are so many things that, like, Google, so many products that Google has that the masses haven't really come in contact with that are so ambitious. Being able to get glucose from a contact lens, or like being able to put internet in Kenya based off of a balloon. Like, I do feel like they forget the very small basic things in terms of like communicating or like messaging with people, you know?
Yeah. They think on grand scales, and sometimes I think they have trouble humanizing things, which is a very Google way of doing things. Everything is sort of programmatic, and like, how can we simplify this with an algorithm, or how can we, you know, make this extremely efficient? And I think sometimes they lose the humanity of it, and that's why they struggle with, you know, the social aspects of their products.
Yeah, man, definitely. So we're just gonna take a quick break, pay some bills, basically. Then we're gonna have like three more questions that I wanted to ask you. This has been a fantastic conversation.
This is fun.
And we are back. Previously, we just actually talked about his journey of technology, what he's dealt with in terms of technology professionally and personally. Kind of talked about some of his experience working with or using Google products. And now I want to dive in deep into what he finds as the pros and cons of using Google products. And also, I want you to also mention some of the Google products that you're going to talk about in terms of pros and cons.
Okay. So let's start with pros. So the pros of living in a Google universe and using Google products. Obviously everything is really convenient. You know, Google makes things easy to get to, you know, as easy to get to as possible, because they want you to use it as much as possible. So if you use Google Chrome, you know, they make it so you can add shortcuts to all your Google services. It's really easy to, you know, share documents with other Google Drive users in Google Drive and Google Docs and things like that. You always have everything you need online. You know, Google stuff is always in the cloud. There's very little risk of ever losing anything in your Google environment, because you know, they've got everything. And another pro is that you can always get that stuff out. Google has their takeout platform that you can go and you can log in and you can download all of your Google account information, you know, right from that one page in a giant zip file. So
just to step back for a second, again, I know some of my audience, there's some things they're not part of the IT community or like IT professionalism, but so cloud-based computing, or just the cloud, what is this infamous thing when we say the cloud?
So the cloud just refers to someone else's computer, basically. That's the funny way of looking at it. But yeah, Google owns a bunch of big warehouses full of computers. That's called a data center. And they store all of the, you know, customer information and things like that. They store it there securely. It's encrypted and everything's secure. But they have data centers all over the country and all over the world, in regions where it's easy and quick for everyone to get to it from their internet connection at their house. So when you store things in the cloud, it's kept on Google servers. So if you're working on your computer and you're working on a Google Doc and your computer crashes, you don't lose your document because you're working on it in a web browser, which is running off of a server that, you know, Google owns in a data center somewhere a couple hours from your house. So you don't lose that document. You boot your computer back up, open Chrome and it's still there.
Right. And I know when the first class I ever had, the best analogy that my professor had was banks, right? At a time where we all used to carry cash all the time, mm-hmm. now we have what's called, like, obviously a debit card to be able to access our cash wherever and whenever we wanted to. It's in essence, it's the same as having that cash, but that cash is not physically on us. It's in someone else's bank. It's in someone's bank. You know, I guess that's the best way I can kind of explain it to someone that isn't necessarily, I guess IT literate is the word. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a good metaphor.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So now are we done with your pros or were there more?
I'm trying to think. I mean, convenience and, you know, ease of use is definitely one. It's a lot of their products are free. Most of the products are free. So, normally you don't have to buy into any Google products unless you want to, sort of pay for a higher tier, like a premium service. For example, in Google Drive, you get, you get a certain amount of free space. And then if you want to upgrade, you can pay $10 a month to get a terabyte or 2 terabytes of space.
Yeah. And that's always like Google's mantra is where it's like at the very bottom level of what they're trying to do, what product they have, they want it to be at scale. And they know that not everyone can afford to spend a certain amount of money to get a service that should be universally accessible.
Yeah. So Google's business model allows for them to, what people will say is that you are the product. I wouldn't necessarily look at it that way. Google's not selling you personally. They are taking some of your behaviors and things like that and analyzing that and displaying ads based on your activity, which is not being shared. Right. Personal information is not being shared directly with advertisers, but some of your behaviors are, so that they can display ads and that's how they make money. So they can offer you these good products for free. And then if you want to go with the freemium model, you can pay to upgrade the products.
Yeah, exactly. And like, there's two different sides of the coin in this conversation. You know, I'm with you, Jason. I'm on the side of the coin where that level of convenience and safety and security is perfect.
Yeah, right. Google single-handedly sort of revolutionized the ad space. Like, they came along and made it more efficient on both sides. So for advertisers, they can more directly advertise to people who are more likely to be interested in their product. And for the consumer, they're getting ads that are more relevant to the things that they might want to buy. It's sort of a win-win for everybody. And then they've done just about everything they can possibly do to be transparent and upfront with the data that they collect. A lot of the stuff you can opt out of if you want. And then you won't get as relevant ads, but you can if you want. So I think Google has made huge strides, especially in the last 4 or 5 years, to improve the privacy aspect of the business and make it so that users can get their data out if they want and sort of disable some features they want, you know, a little bit more privacy.
That's what I really like, because again, it's easily accessible. So now since we've praised Google on all their products, on some of the products that we really enjoy, what are some cons that you find using some of Google products?
Well, the biggest one that would probably come to most people's minds is the killing of products.
Okay.
So Google has garnered a bad reputation for sort of killing products. Before, you know, people get super into it, they start using it, and then Google's like, well, we're shutting it down and we're going to roll out a new version of a similar product.
And people get pretty passionate about that. We know someone specifically.
We do. you know, I kind of get it, because I have gotten pretty attached to some Google products that have gone by the wayside. Right. I loved Google Plus. You know, I met a lot of great people on there.
My gosh.
And honestly, I think to this day, it was the best social network. I mean,
by far,
people gave it a really hard time. But I met some of the best people on there. They sort of kept it clean until towards the end when it was just full of spam. But
Don't bring up Google Plus, man.
But yeah, it hurts. It hurts.
Like, I guarantee you, my entire family knows what Google Plus is because of me. I would just like rave about it consistently. Like, the amount of times I try to get people to switch from Facebook to Google Plus. I'm sorry. Anyways, continue. Definitely the killing of products.
Yeah, the killing of products is one. Sometimes, in some ways, Google products are hard to use offline. Now, it's rare that you're ever without an internet connection these days, But if you are using a Chromebook, you know, without an internet connection, you know, mm-hmm. your ability to do things is reduced somewhat. So there's that aspect that Google's entire world is sort of online.
And again, by online, because again, I think I know some people would just think online, like, oh, wait, everyone can see what I'm doing. No, that's not what that means. That just means that, like Jason said previously, that you're able to go to the website and privately log into that account.
Right.
The only person that can get into whatever's online is you, or whoever you give your login information to. That's it. But yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you're okay. You know, I'm not sure that I can even think of a third con.
Okay. Because I'm trying to think of one for you to fill in. Because you said the killing of apps. That's definitely one. And so I'm going to dive into the killing of apps for a second. So
yeah, sure.
It's frustrating to me just as much as it is for Jason, for sure. However, I think we both can agree the understanding of why they're killing of apps sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, Google has never really lost that sort of startup company feel where they're always looking for the next big, you know, newer thing. I think they're also very excited about technology, I feel like. As a big fan of Google services and products, I feel like... the people who are like me are also like that. They're sort of always trying new things and just messing around with, you know, new operating systems or new applications and new services and things like that. And I think Google internally sort of feels that way too, where it's like, all right, we've got this product, but man, we have this other thing that's working and it's got this and it's got that, but it's got a whole different code base and we can't really roll it into this current application. So, but man, I really want to use the new one. Let's just kill the old one and start with the new
one. Exactly. But yeah, that's, I totally agree with definitely with the killing of products. I can't think of a third one though. I think I'll hone in specifically on this one. It's messaging.
Okay. You're right. Yeah.
Like, because it's like they're, every single time they get so close, like with Google Hangouts, when Google Hangouts first came out, we all loved it, right?
It was great.
It was built into our favorite product, Google Plus, and we were like, oh, this is amazing. We can do video chat. It was video chatting before video chatting became so popular.
It was, yeah. And they were one of the first ones to really popularize it.
That, and on top of the fact you can go, like the idea of going live now, like on Instagram or like Facebook.
That was there first.
That was there first, and it'll directly go straight onto YouTube. Like, it's so crazy that like we've had those products already built and set up, and then just like we said, Google sees a core programming language that they want to use for a similar product, but they can't put it in there at the same time. So they're like, okay, let's just kind of kill this off and work on something else. And it's frustrating, but messaging. That it's a whole combination of those three cons that we just list.
Yeah.
Messages falls into all three of those things.
You're right. I think the reason I couldn't come up with that is because I sort of rolled it into the killing products category because they've killed so many messaging products.
Oh my gosh.
But you're right. Let's go through the list. It does really, you know, stand out on its own.
So let's go through the list since everyone in the tech space likes to go through the list. We already said
Google Plus.
We said Google Plus. You did say Google Wave as well.
Google Wave, yeah. Google Spaces, Google Buzz.
Spaces. Hangouts. Well,
Hangouts is around still in a different form.
Right.
Google Talk is dead.
Talk.
Yeah.
And then GChat, which is coming back in a way, but that's for a different conversation. Yeah. And now Messages by Google, which I wish they named it kind of differently. I still think they should name it GMessage, but hey, I don't know.
Yeah, you know, do you remember when they spun out the messaging system in Google Plus?
Yes, I do. It was like a yellow icon, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. It was like a yellow speech bubble, and I think that sort of inspired Allo. I don't know.
Oh my gosh, I just thought about that. Wow.
Yeah.
You're probably right.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I think we're going too far into this pros and cons thing.
We could go on forever.
It really could. Because, yeah. I mean, as much as fans we are in terms of Google products and services, we do find frustrations within the whole experience.
Yeah.
Like we sip on the Kool-Aid, but it's not always an enjoyable flavor.
And we are, you know, willing to openly criticize Google and their products when we feel it's necessary.
Exactly.
Although, you know, we don't feel it's necessary as often as some others do.
Exactly. Right. I don't think we're in, like, I guess, insanely biased. Is that the word? Like, insanely biased, or?
Yeah, I don't think that we are insanely biased. I would call myself a Google fanboy, but not to the point where I'm a Google apologist, where I would
That's the word, yeah.
I'm not going to take everything that they give me, good and bad, and never criticize or complain or ask for better things.
Exactly.
You know, I've submitted plenty of feedback requests and bug reports to Google, you know, asking for things to improve. So,
man, I put in like full-blown tickets. Like,
yeah.
It like went back and forth between a developer in terms of like, okay, this isn't working. You guys need to work on something.
They were pretty good.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, they were pretty good at getting feedback. Just recently, I actually submitted a bug report about Minecraft on Chromebooks because you couldn't get the mouse cursor to lock into the game. So you can only turn so far to the left and right before the mouse cursor hit the left or right edge of the screen. And that's fixed now. So it's, yeah, it took a couple Chrome OS updates, but that's fixed.
Nice. So let's go into the next, well, one of the last questions. I'll do two more questions. So just thinking about your day, right? What tech are you using to get you through your day?
To be honest, it's probably 90% the smartphone now. And I've got a Pixel 4 XL and, you know, the alarm wakes me up in the morning. You know, I get up and read the news on my phone in the morning.
Yeah.
I listen to the news or podcast first thing in the morning. I check the weather on my phone in the morning. You know, and whenever I'm just standing around or I need something to do, I look at my phone. Other than that, you know, throughout the house, there's, you know, I have Google devices. So whenever I want to play music, to be honest, Google Home has revolutionized the way I listen to music in my house.
Yeah.
Because, you know, before this, it was just Sonos and that was it.
Yeah.
Or you could build your own sort of geeky, hacky DIY system with like Raspberry Pis and stuff. But when Chromecast came along and Chromecast Audio and Google Homes, it really revolutionized the way I listen to music. So that Google is a huge part of how I listen to music. And it's pretty much the only way I listen to music now, whether it's at home on a Google Home speaker or on a Chromecast or in the car on Android Audio.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I know. So my fiance, she uses Amazon Alexa.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I that was stupid. Amazon Echo. You get what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. It's a little confusing the way they named it.
Yeah. And it's a good product. Don't get me wrong. It's a good product. It's not horrible by any means. Mm-hmm. It's definitely the most popular, mainly because it was one of the first ones that came out. But like you said,
yeah,
the way Google has quickly caught up with like the level of convenience, the price of everything is super cheap, and how everything just connects perfectly when it comes to like YouTube and like Netflix and just music, and even being able to not just listen into YouTube music, but Spotify or pretty much any music service you want to listen to. Super convenient. I mentioned it in another episode, but I'm also a Pixel 4 XL user. Easily my favorite phone I've ever used in my entire life.
Same.
I don't know if I'll have, I might just have like a full smartphone episode, like an Android episode, but that's for another day. To extend that last question about what's the tech you use throughout the day, what is your tech that you own, but you find yourself not using it as much? That's a Google product.
Oh, let's see. Android tablet.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, an Android tablet. Yeah. You know, as we all know, they haven't really hit it out of the park yet with an Android tablet.
Yeah.
I think Chrome OS is sort of moving its way into taking over that space. But yeah, I mean, I have a 10-inch Amazon Kindle that I rooted and like stripped all the Amazon stuff off of it. So it's just kind of running almost stock Android at this point. And the only thing I use it for really is to read comic books because it's such a large device. But other than that, it's not it's sort of frustrating to use because Android wasn't really built well for a giant device like that. But Chrome OS was. So I'm pretty excited about the upcoming Chrome OS tablets that are coming out.
So going into the last question, and I don't want to keep you any longer, but last question is, and I'm going to read this one verbatim, okay? If Google were to disappear tomorrow, what would you use? Because you just explained all the technology that you use that are Google products, but what would you use to replace it and kind of explain why you would choose those specific products?
That is an interesting question. So does that Google product include all of Android?
All of Android.
Okay, so there are only really two operating systems left for mobile devices these days. Yeah. And I don't like the other one. So that's a tough one. I mean, there are open source smartphones out there that run Linux. So I would probably find, you know, being the person I am, I can make things work for me. So I would probably go with, you know, some one of those open source devices like the Pine phone or the Ubuntu phone or one of those things like that. And then I would use, you know, on a desktop or laptop, I would use Linux or Windows. If Android was still around and they didn't make Pixels, I would probably use a OnePlus device.
Yeah, I remember you telling me about that.
Yeah, they seem to have the best sort of you know, OEM skin and the best specs and everything at the most reasonable price.
Why do you choose Android?
I choose Android because it allows me to be myself, and it kind of caters to what I need and want. It allows me to adjust it to what the operating system I want to use on my phone. Unlike some others that they want you to use the phone the way they want to use it. Android lets me use my phone the way I want to use it.
And so, like, with that being said, because I knew you were going to say that, because I feel the same exact way. And I think the reason why we feel that way is because you realize that the way you use something isn't the same way another person uses it. Right. And I'm being very vague because it can almost apply to a lot of things. And what certain companies do is they realize that some people like to be catered to, not catered to. Mm-hmm. They like to be, they prefer the comfortability of like one size fits all.
Yeah. They want someone to do their thinking for them.
Basically. Right. And I get that argument, but at the same time, when you come up with those frustrations of not being able to do a certain thing that is part of your job, or just being able to like just navigate throughout your daily life in terms of like convenience and connectivity of stuff, it gets frustrating at times. Mm-hmm. And I could tell we're the type of people that when we get to that frustration, we're problem solvers. So we're like, okay, how can I make it so this works for me? Instead of just being like, oh, well, it doesn't work. Never mind. Forget it. You know?
Right. You know, there are certain platforms where if you run into that wall where you can't make it work, there's nothing you can do. There's no workaround because the device has been limited by the manufacturer to only work a certain way because that's the way they think it should be done.
Right. Exactly. And since everyone in the world is different, everyone's their own individual mm-hmm. person. And it's like, you can't just make one thing that works for everyone because that's impossible. What you end up doing is making something that only works for you. And just if anyone else wants to use it, they just have to use it the way you use it.
Like, exactly. Period. Yeah.
And that's a different, we can go on a rant for that for like days.
That could be the longest discussion.
That's definitely going to be an episode for sure.
It's got to be.
But you said the Android phone is going to be OnePlus. Computer is going to be either Linux or Windows. Mm-hmm. How about your speakers? Speakers in your house?
I would probably set up some sort of Wi-Fi speaker with, or Bluetooth. I would probably use Bluetooth speakers, to be honest. That'd be the easiest solution. That was always the easiest solution before, smart speakers and things like that.
Nice, nice. Okay. Now, how about, we didn't talk about any watches or anything. What about your watch?
I didn't wear watches before smartwatches, so I probably just wouldn't wear a watch.
Okay.
Or I would just wear a fitness band or something, you know, a Fitbit or something.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I really appreciate you sitting down and talking to me, having this Google Talk.
Of course, man. I appreciate you inviting me to do it. It's been fun.
Isn't there a product called Google Talk?
There was. I think we have to dig up its corpse.
All right. Or there's a Talks at Google. I know that for sure.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
But yeah, man, I appreciate it again. Jason, this guy is fantastic. I've been like friends with him for like a while. We definitely need to hang out. He actually lives close to me, but we're not going to give out addresses on this show. But yeah, thank you. thank you so much for being on the show, man.
Yeah, man, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
You have been listening to Google by Mike. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to listen to Jason and I's conversation. Also, a special thank you to Jason himself for taking the time out of his day to answer my questions in this interview. You'll hear from me again soon, very soon. This is Mike Brown. You are listening to Google by Mike. Take care, everyone.
Thanks again for listening to Google by Mike. Have a good one.